We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we're looking at Space 1999 episode, War Games. As Earth's moon approaches an unnamed planet, Earth-made Mark IX Hawk warships approach Alpha. Refusing to answer, Koenig gives the order to fire. Alpha wins the first round, but subsequent waves of Hawks wipe out all of Alpha's laser-equipped Eagles, killing most of the Eagle pilots and leaving Alan in Eagle One crippled in orbit. The Hawks attack the base, inflicting massive casualties. Half of Alpha's personnel are killed, including Dr. Mathias. The planet sends in a bomber to finish the job, but Alan saves the day. Alpha is no longer viable. Repair times are beyond the food and power reserves. So Koenig and Helena go to the planet to beg for mercy. Or angrily demand it, as Koenig's diplomatic skills fail him miserably. The inhabitants refuse, and Helena is taken prisoner and put in a box, where they babble to her about not being afraid. Koenig goes back and decides they have no choice but to evacuate Alpha and fight for a place to live on this planet. He and Alan return, but their Eagle is destroyed. Carter is killed, and Koenig floats to his death in space. He makes peace with that. Having conquered his fear of death, the aliens encourage Helena to save him, which she apparently can do with her mind. Koenig appears on the planet. He shoots a laser, and the whole planet blows up, more or less. He tells the Alphans, now that all the aliens have been killed and their cities destroyed, to return to the moon so that they can die there instead. And we're back on main mission at that critical moment before Koenig gives the order to attack. He doesn't, and the Hawks disappear. Psych! It was all a dream to explain to the Alphans how awful they were and why they needed to stay away from that planet. The end. I'm going to start off with saying I am not a fan of episodes that reset
everything. Oh, no.
No. Yeah. This one kind of is a big stinking cheat.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. In fact, I'll just go ahead and jump to my final sentence in my notes and said that I really think this episode should be called WTF.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So here's what I envision. I envision somebody saying, you know, maybe some of our episodes have been a little too talky, thinky, touchy-feely. What we need is a big, old, epic space battle. We need some fighting and blasting and explosions and show what our special effects boys can really, really do. And so let's put the Alphans at war with somebody. Yeah, we can do that. Yeah. That's going to be awesome. Blowing up Eagles and moon base and people being sucked out into space and dying and floating off in their space suits. And oh, yes, this is awesome. And then somebody says, we only have 300 and some people on the moon base. We can't kill too many up. And, of course, we only have a finite number of Eagles, so we can't blow up too many of those. And of course, you know, if you damage the moon base that badly, I mean, they probably wouldn't be able to live there. Then they'd have to, you know, go to a planet or something, and then we wouldn't be Space 1999 anymore. I mean, well, how are we going to do about that? And then years before Bobby Ewing, somebody says, hey, I know, it was all a dream.
And I gotta wonder if this little cheat had ever been done before, and I have a nagging feeling in the back of my mind that it has been. Oh yeah, Star Trek, Spectre of the Gun.
Kind of.
I mean, it. You know, I mean, it's not really like
they
the whole thing
they
was a dream.
Really died, yeah.
Yeah, they really would have died, but it still ended up being a bit of a reset at the end. But yeah, I keep thinking that this kind of really evil story trope has been done before, and it's just disgusting.
It's I'm not a fan. I think that's pretty obvious at the moment. I'm not a fan of it. I really do understand why you want to do it, because obviously, you know, one of the problems with television as we understand it in the 1970s is that episodic reset nature where you can't tell an evolving story. And you know, there are certain things that you can't tell unless you're willing to, you know, affect the characters in some profound way, like mm-hmm. killing them and or killing a bunch of them. And how do you balance the two in the everything has to be back to status quo at the end of the episode? And it's a cheat to the audience.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't treat the audience intelligently, and sadly, too many television shows have played that game where they just do this reset, and more than one iteration of Star Trek has been guilty of that. And I would say that this is probably the most egregious of them all.
Egregious is the word I would have used. Yes, this is. I'd be fascinated. I might do a little research and see if I can find examples of that being done prior to this. I mean, really, just the completely. This was just a cautionary warning to show you what would have happened if you make the decision that we've asked you not to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Spectre of the Gun is not quite like that, but.
Not really.
You know,
no.
Yeah, they were in their own mind, but they were being.
But yeah, they would have died. They would have died.
They didn't kill today, so hey, maybe we'll let you live, and you can come make peace with us and stuff like that. So, it's not quite, but yeah, I'm. So here's the thing, I know people. I do know people. Honest.
I know people too. You know, how about that?
And a couple of them, anyway. And some of them will even admit to knowing me.
And, shock.
I know people that when you talk to them about a story and you go, well, you know, this doesn't make any sense, or I don't, you know, think about this. You put A, B, and I mean, this is bad. It's bad plotting that they don't go from A to B to C and it logically, and even if they skip things that they didn't, you know, put the pieces together, you know, when I have that. And those people will go, well, I don't care about that. As long as it's a fun and exciting story that I get to watch, and I'm gripped by it in the moment rather than looking at the end. And I firmly disagree with that logic. I think that's probably part of the reason why stories are so awful now, is because there's too many people that don't actually care about a beginning, middle, ending, rising action, conclusion, and logical tie around. And, you know, this is a prime example. So I could see somebody really digging this story.
Ugh.
Not because it's, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And in the end, it doesn't, it's a cheat, but it's a cool space battle. I think it's really well done.
I mean, for its day, it was a cool space battle. And, I also think that the episode has got some really awesome-looking production value. I mean, purely from a visual aspect, this is a really slick-looking episode of Space 1999. But, yeah, like you, I have this thing where I need to have – you know, content is king as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not one of these big believers in style over substance. If the substance isn't there – you know, that's like having the gravy but no meatloaf, you know, to use a food metaphor. But there's got to be some really strong foundation of a story that's got to make sense in order for all the spectacle to make sense. You just don't throw all this crash, bang, boom in there for the sake of putting it there and think that your audience is going to love it. Yeah, there will be a few. But again, you're selling your audience short and saying, yeah, science fiction fans, you know, they'll watch anything. You know, they're really looking down at the kind of scrutiny that science fiction fans are truly capable of giving.
Yeah. I do want to go so far as to say, to clarify my comment, and with regards to the style over substance, I just want to make sure that some of the people that I argue with about what makes a good hour of drama or television, it's not always, you know, me versus plotting versus them versus style. Sometimes it's me versus plotting and them versus emotional interaction and truthiness of, to borrow a Colbert word, you know, and the resonance of the emotional mark between. So they have a deep thing. It's not just a smart plot, them silly, you know, ooh, pretty baubles.
Yeah, no, you're right. Those things. But, you're right. And I will agree with that, because I know I can't pick out an episode right off the top of my head without looking back to everything that we've talked about. But I know that we have seen episodes where I fell into that second camp, where there was something about it that just had such incredible emotional resonance for me that I found myself liking it, but with the caveat that I thought the storytelling could have been better.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. It's like, if you can have a show that's got fantastic emotional resonance between the characters and it's still a crummy plot, what you've still got is a defective story.
Yeah.
What you need is a story with a good plot that has the emotional reference. You can't use one as a crutch to overcome the other.
And absolutely.
That's the part that, you know, the scaffolding there of the story is a thing. And so let's ignore the cheap, shoddy ending of this episode for a second, which, of course, they completely forgot.
Pretty much.
Is, you know, even funnier. I mean, Koenig is like, it was there, and then gone. And then Helena says, I remember it. And then suddenly she goes, it's gone. And I think that was the last line, something like that. So, I mean, they completely forgot the whole thing, too. So, you know, they didn't learn anything from it because it's all gone. And but the parts after the fighting and before they got to the we're going to give up and die, what a load of old claptrap.
Well, and not only that, but there was a ton of inconsistency in all of it, just in terms of the way the lesson was being imparted by these aliens. For example, Koenig, he is going to start destroying all the equipment on the planet, and the male alien, you know, and I think the female kind of also backs him up on this, says, you know, his own fear, he did it to himself. His own fear killed him. So then he comes back after having what I lost count the number of times he died. I really did.
Twice,
I think. Twice. And one of the times, then he comes back, and now he's just shooting the crap out of everything there. And I'm like, and, you know, earlier the aliens were like, oh, no, we can't allow you to be here. And then, you know, Helena asks, well, you know, are you going to stop him? And again, no, we're not going to stop him. You know, your fear will destroy us. I'm like, okay, so you've got a lot of consistency going as far as you aliens are concerned. And then Koenig shows up and he's just blasting everything with the laser gun. So I kept getting the feeling that if there was a lesson to be imparted, that it was being done very poorly.
Yeah, because why did the aliens not want them to come?
Because of their fear.
Yeah, because the aliens feared that the Alphans would destroy them.
Yeah. But I think even that's kind of brought up too a little bit. I will give I believe Helena actually does make some – she makes a really small insinuation about that little bit of hypocrisy. But it's just glossed over so fast, and then we forget about it just like the Alphans forget about it.
We could try to decide if there is a reason other than fear. So if you have no fear and somebody is going to inject you with a poison,
mm-hmm.
do you stop them? I mean, is there a logical or is a non-fear-based reason for not letting someone kill you.
Hmm.
And that seems to be what we've got. They're seeing the Alphans as a virus that will destroy them. Can you make a case that isn't based on, well, we don't want to die?
Well, I mean,
maybe it's better if the Alphans come to your planet and take over and they run the planet for a while. Why is your way better than their way? And, you know, why do you fear it?
It brings up a good point. The instinct for survival is there a layer of fear? I would say yes. I mean, we could try to rationalize it as much as we want, but yeah, I would say that the instinct for survival does have some basis in fear. So, that does kind of paint the aliens in a rather unusual light, doesn't it?
Yeah. But let's talk about how awful Koenig is in this episode.
What an idiot he is.
He is. Okay, so at the beginning of the episode, when the Hawks are bearing down on them, of course, with hindsight, it's easy to say, well, you shouldn't have attacked the Hawks. They are clearly warbirds, Earth warbirds. They know what they are. They know what they're for.
So this
This is like if we were looked up and we saw some F-17s coming at you.
Right.
You go, somebody's sending fighters right at us.
Hit the deck.
What should they have been thinking that deep in space?
What the heck are these ships doing out here? Humans?
There was no question of that.
No, there wasn't. And that's one of the things that really bothered me. I want to clarify that I had not seen this episode before. His is another one that slipped right underneath my radar. Don't know why. Maybe just the way it was broadcast. But one of the things that I wrote.
Maybe you forgot it.
I could only wish that I could forget it. And I'm hoping that I'm going to try. If I could actually do a memory dump on this one episode, I will gleefully do so. In one of my first paragraph on my note says, if Alpha is on the other side of the galaxy, if not the universe, then how do they recognize the alien ships approaching Alpha? And, well, forget the second part. Why do they appear so similar to the Eagles? Well, duh, we know now. Now we know. But it's that first part that just really frosts me. How do you recognize them? And how does Koenig recognize the enemy's war tactics as well as their ships? And I will admit, for one moment, and I'm giving the writers way too much credit, I thought, did they get this from the computer records of the ship that had the Queller drive?
Hmm. Yeah, that's pushing the whole story arc thing way.
I know. Yeah. I know. I'm giving them way too much credit for that one. But I kept coming back to this because I'm trying to understand the episode. And herein lies a big problem with the way it's being presented to me. They have given the viewer the biggest puzzle that is so enormous that if there's any chance for them to try to create a moment of any kind of emotional resonance between episode and viewer, they're blowing it. Because any observant watcher who's been following the show, at least, and maybe even if this is their first episode, with just the basic understanding, oh, moon's been blown way out of orbit, they're on the other side of the galaxy, okay, cool. I'll just jump right in right now. And even that person would kind of stop and say, hit the pause button and go, whoa, wait a minute. How did those ships get out there?
Settled if just one character had even commented on it. Instead of just all of them identifying it. Those all are just, nine Hawks, John.
It's knee-jerk reaction. Now, granted, this plays into that whole fear thing that the aliens were talking about, but it doesn't make sense.
Right.
Because I kind of get the feeling that it was – did you get the feeling that the whole delusion was something of not just a lesson but also a test?
No. Actually, I didn't. I got the impression that the aliens decided Alphans were bad, 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 and we're just going to do this to get them to go on by and not to see how they're going to behave.
So,
I don't think there was any evidence that they were willing – that they could have passed the Kirk test. So, wow, you know something? You guys aren't as bad as we thought. I didn't get that at all.
Okay, so maybe their thoughts were being so manipulated that they reacted the way they did?
Well, now, so that's an interesting question. You know, are we seeing what they would have done given those circumstances, or are we just seeing a movie that was played out in their heads telling them how they would behave? If so, the aliens don't plot out a very tight movie.
No, they don't. And it actually, and to be honest, I'm even though I said that, it really doesn't hold any water, because when you get to the very end of the episode where all of a sudden now we're in the real world, real time, they're still reacting the way they are reacting. It's only Koenig and Helena.
And only because Helena is there and she wasn't there in the first scene.
Right. That's why Koenig changes, because he sees Helena and then that's when he has the second thought.
Yeah.
That's weird. It was very weird. But leading up to that moment, their pattern is exactly the same as it was before. Mm-hmm. So that would suggest to me that it's not their thoughts that are being manipulated. They're just behaving very poorly.
Which makes me sad. I'm going to give them just a slight benefit of the doubt.
I'm shocked.
I'm going to give them a slight benefit of the doubt. You are approaching a planet. You are trying to communicate with a planet. And the planet sends three ships straight at you in radio silence. And they're obviously, okay, you should be questioning, why are they Earth ships? But they are obviously warships, because you can clearly recognize that they're warships. We have seen Koenig in this position before, and when they're being approached and they cannot get a response and it looks threatening, they have shot first. Or yeah, they've at least given the order to shoot first. This is the first time I think they ever shot first and it actually worked. So it's not out of character for things that Koenig has done in the past. Certainly, even Victor is like, it's an attack, John. You know, I mean, their tactical knowledge says this looks like an attack, and what do? You defend yourself. So, and because of the overwhelming advantage of the Hawks being twice as fast as the Eagles, they can't wait for them to shoot first and go after them because of their disadvantage. They've got to spring it. So I'm not saying it's okay, but it's not beyond the realm of possibility based on what we have seen in the past. Now, obviously, my thought would be, if there's three of them, they can probably send a bunch more because they're a planet and we're a rickety old moon.
Mm-hmm.
So that part was a little dodgy. And like I say, if somebody had just said, how could it possibly be Hawks? How could those be Earth ships, Commander? If somebody had said that, and
I would have been okay.
We don't have time to think about that. We don't have time to figure that out because they're coming straight at us.
Okay, I would have been okay with that.
I know. Just one line of dialogue could have at least put the audience, you know, slightly at ease to say, well, at least they aren't all completely stupid heads.
Yeah.
So we have that. You mentioned the bit about saying, how would he know the rule book? That is the rule book. I mean, he is quoting classic World War II tactical. You send in the fighters, you punch down the defenses, you engage their fighters, you minimize their defensive fighters, you minimize their ground-to-air thing, and then you send in the bomber with more fighters.
Well,
That's standard procedure. You soften them up and then you blow them to bits. So he's a military guy himself, and they are plucking this from their mind. So in retrospect, you know, that they would follow the exact same pattern we'd follow. The only difference is they would send more bombers than just one.
Yeah, well, he's also acting under the assumption that they're human.
Yep.
So therefore, that's why I asked the question, how does Koenig know the enemy's war tactics and ships? Because I kept hoping that Koenig was thinking, how can these aliens have our technology? You know, that's the part that I kept getting hung up on.
Well, so here's an unanswered question. Was the bomber Earth technology? Or did they just look at it and say, that's a big ship and it must be a bomber? See, Koenig is projecting on it, having been attacked by fighters, now a big honking ship, which has got a flight of Hawks in formation around it, which is exactly what you do with a bomber run, is you have fighters to engage, and he looks at it, and it doesn't matter. That could be a peace envoy from aliens.
Well,
for all we know.
For all we know, yeah, but he
but
recognized
Koenig
it.
Koenig is projecting what he understands it to be,
right,
which is fighters then bombers.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's the pattern he sees, and he's projecting it on there. I think it probably was a bomber because it was, in fact, his mind,
mm-hmm,
or someone on Alpha creating that scenario. But, yeah, I don't exactly fault Koenig for firing first, and I don't fault him for assuming that it's the bomber.
No.
Where I start faulting Koenig is when he goes to the planet and he can't control his feelings. And I don't mean his fear. I mean his anger.
Oh, but we've known that this is a basic characteristic on Koenig's part. We're going to see it next season. I know,
right,
I'm jumping the timeline, but there's a really another egregious episode where he just lets his anger get the best of him in the most stupid of situations. This is a basic characteristic trait of the man. Koenig cannot keep his emotions in check.
Do you think that this is part of that process of making, quote unquote, making him more human? He's not just some paragon. He's you know, he's got his flaw. Because he goes down to the planet, they should be groveling, basically. I mean, put your damn pride aside, man. You have just had your butt handed to you on a plate with some French fries on the side, and you head down to the planet to talk to them, and they let you talk to them, right? I mean, they guide them safely in, and they say, don't worry, you're safe, fine, come on in. And then as soon as they start saying, well, you know, we're not going to let you in the planet, he starts spouting. And Helena has to stand in front of him at one point and, like, I mean, she doesn't say it, but the look is there. John, let me try this one. Okay, let's just try my approach. But you see, we don't want to hurt anybody. And we're like, you know, she's being all submissive and stuff. And Koenig is just like, and, like, how did you get in charge of anything more than a hot dog cart with that kind of temper? I, you know, it seems a little bit worse than some of his previous ones, but not entirely. But it does seem like you really, really should.
He needs anger management classes.
You really need to have your hat in your hand at this moment, Koenig, if you're hoping for anybody to survive. And you know, he can't even do it. And that bugs me. That bugs me in this episode, if this is supposed to be his real reactions. But maybe it's not. I had not considered this until you mentioned it. Maybe this is a story that they're making up to show them, and it's not beyond the realm of plausibility that Koenig doesn't. Well, all right. Hold on a second. I'll carry that back, because since they can't even remember it, since Koenig can't even remember it at the moment that he cancels the attack, right? I mean, he's characterizing it as sort of a vague sort of
an intuition.
So he's not getting the details. You're wondering if that moment, if he's remembering, yeah, I was killed and then I was floating.
No, he's not remembering any of it. It's
just like, whoa, wait a minute. I did something and then it was like bad. And then so maybe we should, okay, don't shoot. So it's gone. So they could have told him a story with Puff the Magic Dragon and flowers and you know, hippie vans and a talking Great Dane and who knows what, if when he goes back, he can't remember it, and he's just like, yeah, I think maybe I should. It's like, that doesn't quite work out. So I think we have to assume that this is really what would have happened.
Yeah, I have to.
If they had gone to the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So Koenig was
He was a dick.
He was a complete jerk there. Benny goes back and he says, okay, well, we're going to have to fight for it. All right, fine. You know, if I don't fault him there. Actually, I mean, why would you stay on the rock and die?
No, I agree with
you. Might
that,
as well go down and.
Yeah, if he feels that's his only alternative, then yeah, I agree with the premise. But it's everything that a lot of the decisions that are leading up to that I have a problem with. Now you've made the comment about Koenig's emotions that he just is not capable of keeping in check. We really don't have
more any important than his thinking.
Although clearly, I know we really have no clue in terms of the overall Earth science space hierarchy. What kind of an assignment is this? How is it regarded? Is it a plum assignment, or is it considered something of a backwater joke? Being commander of Moonbase,
I have to assume it's a plum assignment. I mean, he's there to get a job done and get man on Meta. So that has to be a high-profile, high – it's got to be.
Then he should never have been put there.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to have the
– No, because now you've put him in a real – I mean, if he's got that kind of volatile nature to begin with, well, you know, this – okay. And now I'm going to –
He is pushed.
I'm going to give him the slightest benefit of the doubt here, and it's and I'm only saying this just to say it. And this is a point that I've brought up in the past – nobody on that moon is a space explorer.
They're of this nature,
no,
that's right.
No, they're not. They are on the moon to perform a job. And that's, you know, to help monitor the radioactive waste that is being buried there, as well as setting up as a launch pad for Planet Meta. With all of that, that's what they're trained for. Now the moon is blown out of orbit. They're thrust into circumstances that are outside of their training, outside of their understanding and their skill set. So I could possibly make the argument that now Koenig's been pushed over the edge, and that's what we've been saying all this time.
He is definitely pushed in this episode. I mean, you kill 130 Alphans under his command. He's
going to be a bit of a raving loon, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can expect grief, I can expect sadness, I can expect some anger, but what we're not getting that in his performance. All we're getting is the anger.
Yeah, right?
I'm not seeing John Koenig, man who is tortured by the death of all his friends and you know, desperate to keep them alive and stuff. I just see John Koenig, a man who's really, really mad.
Yeah,
and that doesn't quite work it.
No, and that tells me that Koenig is a man who has anger management issues in a big way. Now, you had made the comment about how are they trying to make an imperfect commander. Now, I have seen science fiction writers for television make the case, and I don't entirely agree with them, that when people go out to the stars, they bring their faults with them. Okay, I agree with that idea. But then many of them start pointing their fingers at Star Trek and saying, oh, these people are too perfect. And I'll be the first to stand up and say, oh, no, 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 they're not. They're very imperfect, but they strive to overcome their imperfections. And Kirk is, I think, the biggest example of that. We've seen a number of times where he's been placed in a situation where he's kind of called on the carpet for some inappropriate thinking or inappropriate behavior. He gets called on it, and he's got the humility enough to say, yeah, you're right, I'm wrong. So with Kirk, we have an imperfect character who is willing to admit his faults and grow beyond them. With Koenig, if they're trying to create an imperfect character, then I don't know what kind of model they're trying to use to present us somebody with faults, because we don't. As you just pointed out, we don't see him angry over what has happened on Moonbase. We don't see him grieving any of that. We just see a man who is enraged.
Mm-hmm.
He's having a tantrum.
And he has three in this episode.
Yes, he does.
Three tantrums.
I know.
He has this one. Then after they blow up his eagle – And he's getting all philosophical about how long he's got to live and a nice death and it's okay. And then the aliens are like, okay, now he's all right because he's overcome his fear. Because he's going to die. But
well, then they bring him in that. And now it's like, oh, now I'm really pissed off.
Helena brings him back. And what does he do? He pulls out his laser and he shoots some of their equipment.
Because now he's pissed.
Why?
I know.
Why did he do that? And so then the planet starts to blow up. Or I shouldn't say the planet starts to blow up, but the cities start blowing up and all the towers start blowing up. And then some 40-year-old atomic bomb footage starts going off. Well, it wasn't 40 years old at the time.
But it certainly...
I hated that.
I know. That was cheap. And
I hate when you take, the old black and white atomic bomb and H-bomb footage and color it red so that people won't notice that you're showing them black and white footage.
Stop. I know. That's just so lame. But anybody, even back then when this episode aired, all you had to do was look at it and say, ooh, that was severe. And then, hey, guess what? The building still stands.
The one Koenig is still standing. That's right. Okay, fine. Let's pretend like those were their cities and stuff
on the other side of the planet.
Blowing up and stuff, right? That's one. All right, that's tantrum number two. And tantrum or illogical display of coding logic and emotion number three follows immediately upon it. Yeah, Paul, turn her back. There's no point in us dying here. You might as well die on Alpha. It's like, well, wait a minute. You just wiped out all the aliens.
Yeah, the planet's yours for the taking now. Obviously, I mean, it's only 150 people now, John. I'm sure you can find some place to live and that is fairly undamaged.
Yeah, I'm sure you can land the Eagles down somewhere and hope you can grub some food out and go on. And so that didn't make any sense either. That was just like...
No, now he's having a pity party of some sort. I don't know what that was. But it's like, where is that emotional reaction coming from? It made no sense. I mean, that was a very bizarre form of a temper tantrum. It's like, now he's pouting. I'm going to hold my breath until I turn purple.
And I'm taking you with me.
Yeah.
It's like, you know something, Commander? I don't think we're going to turn back. I think we'll just keep on coming. You know? It's like, I don't want to die on Alpha. I'll take my chances on the planet. I don't know what the chances are. I hear they put a Helen on a box. I could deal with that if that's not dying.
Yeah. And
were they offering Helena a place there in their world?
That's kind of what I was thinking. That's what I was getting.
Me too. I mean, obviously, Kano's not going to make it because he's a hothead, and Paul's not going to make it because he's a hothead. Alan's not going to make it
because he's really hotheaded.
But you know, Bergman might.
Oh, Bergman! I think he would have eaten it up. Sandra, yeah, because she's fairly level-headed.
So some of them might have survived. If they'd gone down to the planet and joined into the computer. And I mean, heck, they've been willing to join into every other computer that's come along through space. Why wouldn't they join into this one? I mean, everybody but Koenig, come to think of it.
Yeah.
So basically, Koenig's the only one that was in. They were telling him that Alpha's fine, but Koenig, you're bad, so therefore you guys can't come down. That must be what it was.
Yeah, he is Alpha.
That's true. He is the one... unified voice, and it doesn't matter what his advisors say, he will go along with them as long as they agree with him. So at what point, since this was your first go through in the episode, at what point did you suspect that this couldn't be real?
That's a good question. I don't know if I don't think that ever really consciously crossed my mind, but I do remember thinking quite a lot throughout the episode, they've got one hell of a mess to clean up and 150 dead?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I kept wondering, how are they going to recover from something like that? But at no point did I ever – and maybe it's because I loathe so much the idea of the reset button that – it didn't enter into my brain.
I can tell you where I parted ways with the episode.
And that would have been 5 seconds in. I'm just joking.
No. It's when Bob Mathias gets killed.
Yeah. That floored me.
You know, once the characters who died aren't you know, the nameless minion of the week.
Right.
Suddenly it's like, now something's...
Well,
I'm not saying I knew that this was a fantasy at that point, but in other words, it's like, okay, so at the very least, whatever happens, everything's going to be undone to this point anyway, because Bob Mathias is not going to be dead.
Now, in my case, and again, this is me taking present-day television and applying it, excuse me, applying it to a 1970s TV show, which is completely absurd, but I can't help it. I saw Mathias get, you know, blown out outside of Moonbase, and two things ran through my head. The first one was, do I remember ever seeing him in later episodes, specifically season two? Because season one is, for me, very much out of order, and there's, I think, like maybe only one episode from here on in that I actually recall that we haven't gotten to yet. Everything else about season one is just a blur. Season two, I remember a little bit better, but I don't remember Mathias in any episode of season two. That's not to say that he's not there. I just don't remember. So I kept thinking, does he come back? I just don't seem to remember. And then the second thought that ran through my head was, he must have thought this series was crap and he wanted off the show. And they killed him.
You know, I don't remember whether Dr. Mathias is in season two or not. I could not tell you. I don't recall seeing him there. Certainly, if he is, he doesn't have as big of a part as he does in series one. And he is a decent part. It's not a main, but
no. But it's a good supporting role, and he's a better doctor than Dr. Helena Quack. I'm sorry. I like Barbara Bain. I really do.
That's not Barbara Bain's fault. That's
that's the writing's fault.
That's definitely.
I know, but she carries that torch so well.
Yeah, that Mathias dying was the point where I knew something was going to happen that was going to undo some of this somehow. What else have we got?
Well, the only other thing I can think of is, you know, going back to the title, the real title, not the title that I would love to give it, of WTF, but the title of War Games. I'm just wondering, could that be a parable of the war against fear? If it is, it's a terrible, terrible execution.
Now that you mention it, it's a terrible name, too.
War Games?
There were no games involved here.
No, none. Well, that's why I'm wondering. Maybe, and that's why I wrote that down. I'm wondering, was the idea of the war game actually supposed to be some sort of a parable or a metaphor for this war against fear that that the Alphans are, or specifically Koenig, is having taught to him?
You're giving the writers more credit.
I know.
Than
I really
do,
need to stop doing
fits
that.
Better. It really fits better than what we see there. Anyway, I mean, yeah, I guess it is. It's a sort of a war on fear. Yeah, kind of practice run for it just to see what it's like.
Hey, Koenig, just say no.
Yeah, yeah.
I got nothing
Alan,
else.
I got to say.
I got Alan, nothing
Alan
else.
I got to save the day there at one point.
Who did? When he blew up the bomber. Yay for Alan.
But then it's not real. So
no, it's okay. A fake.
That violates the contract. Alan gets to pull the trigger and save the day this time because this isn't real, Koenig. This isn't real. Also, did you notice he's yelling at everybody to get back to their posts when they're being bombed? Everyone, back to your posts! While the roof is still collapsing.
The roof is collapsing. Yeah, I thought that was kind of lame.
It's like, wait, well, hold on. Okay, hold on. Let's wait for a second. Yeah, is it done falling on us? Yes, now back to
now
your posts.
Now you can move.
Everybody, yeah.
And that's what, and one thing that I noticed is, I mean, Main Mission took a really, really bad hit. And at one point, just, you know, Operation Exodus has just begun. Hey, nice cleanup job there, guys.
They did do a heck of a cleanup job, didn't they? They did. I mean, what you notice is the fact that they've removed all the consoles. And so you're looking at Main Mission that's, you know, wrong. Because it's only got the one console left behind it. And you think, oh, yeah, okay, well, let's see. But you're right. They swept it very nicely and got the pillars and all that stuff out of the way.
Yeah, and fixed the painted the wall a little bit, kind of put the wiring back in there and have it all hidden again so it looks all nice and neat for the next tenant.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's like, why would you... why would you bother? So it's another episode where they didn't learn a lesson.
No.
Because they forgot it.
Yeah.
John Koenig was an idiot. Helena got that nice scream from her leftover from her primal acting class.
Oh, yeah.
That, I couldn't figure out why she was screaming.
No, that made no sense either.
She just leaned back and like, I think that was
but it was just a great moment for Barbara Bain to do her thing.
Oh, I know what I was going to bring up. So we've been – one of the advantages or disadvantages or however you want to look at it of Space 1999's distribution method is that nobody has a canonical order of the episode. And
right.
Since there isn't a story arc per se, then you don't have to put them in order. So, you know, different places show them in a different order. We're watching them in production order. So
we
this is
do,
the order
yes, made. And we do get a God reference. In this
yes,
episode.
He did mention, you know, I don't know, God or something. Somebody's looking after us. He definitely says, now this was like shown fourth in the United States.
Was it that early on? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was really early. So, I mean, they were going for the, hey, big bangs, pow, bam, bam, boo, people are going to love this show kind of thing. Typical network mentality or scheduling mentality. But anyway, Practical Upstart is the Hawks. This would have made more sense to me. If we had previously seen those ships.
Yeah.
Then it's like a cost-saving measure. So we've already got the models built. So we can, you know, like when they do the Sargasso Sea in space stuff, mm-hmm. and you see all the ships we've seen throughout the series because that's the easiest way to do it. And if the Hawks had been in there previously, then I could kind of buy off on that. And if... And this is a bit of a spoiler, but not much of one. If we were to ever see the Hawks again, which we never do, then you could have said, oh, they were doing a joint production, two shows, and they were trying to save somebody. But no, they specifically went out of their way to make those Earth ships.
True. Right?
They could have made any sort of looking ship that looked like a fighter.
I mean, yeah.
Big bristly guns, fast moving.
Exactly. And I would have bought into this a heck of a lot easier. Instead, they had to make it these Earth ships that were immediately viewed as hostile.
Mm-hmm.
And given John's behavior, there is no – and as you know, as we've discussed in this episode, there's been precedent of where John has shot first because – Alien of the Week is showing up with, you know, baring its teeth, and he doesn't want the alien to take a bite out of the moon. So he attacks, he destroys sometimes. So it's not an unfamiliar move on Koenig's part. They could have still played that. Why the heck this whole fiction of it having to be these Earth Hawk ships? I mean, I cannot get past that.
Actually, you just talked it into me. It's because they wanted Koenig to do this. They were goading him into shooting. It's not just hey, we're going to send fighters to you to show you that your fear reaction. It's like they intentionally sent something that he specifically would know to fear. No, unequivocally, they are goading him into firing the first shot.
I agree. But now we're getting into the area of what Siskel and Ebert always refer to as idiot plot.
Mm-hmm.
And that is nobody even asking the question, how the hell are those out here?
Yeah.
I mean, as you said earlier, if someone had just said something, it would have helped to justify the scene a little bit.
And it would have helped us with the fact that that was a clue.
Yeah. It would have actually it could have made the episode overall better. Not much, but somewhat.
Killing Alan, killing Dr. Matthias, those were all clues.
Yeah.
Like, we know that's not going to – but those are clues to the audience understanding – how television works. Those are not clues in the story that this isn't real.
Well, but, you know, but here's the weird thing also. If this episode, again, as you pointed out, I mean, especially when it came to the States, there's no sense of canonical order. If this episode is shown as fourth...
Four or five, yeah.
I mean, you know, the audience isn't going to really care. I mean, we care because, A, we've seen the series numerous times already, even though there's a lot that did slip underneath my radar. I'm still very familiar with who Matthias is and very familiar with who Alan is. So to see them die is enough to for me to say, whoa, something's up.
Now, before we sign off, there's one scene in this episode that I thought was awesome. It's the one time in this entire series so far that I just absolutely, I loved it. Take a guess.
God. Oh, I don't dare.
Bergman, come seek us out.
Oh.
Teach us all you know.
Yeah, that because, actually was good. Yeah.
You know, the sort of the moon base has been abandoned, and he's got 3 minutes to record this little speech that goes with the rock as it flies off into space. And, you know, it's a, we built this to study space, we're mankind, we're from Earth, and we don't know if we're going to survive on this planet, but, you know, please come, look us up, talk to us, we want to learn from you. It was really everything that Victor Bergman is supposed to be.
Yes, I agree. That was Victor's shining moment.
That was his, like, here is the intelligent man, but also his...
But the philosopher as well.
The philosopher is like, what we want to learn, this is, you know, that's what's important, is sharing and
yeah,
learning and stuff. And that was his, there's no BS there, there's no...
No pretension.
There's nothing.
It's all
laid bare.
It is 100% truth coming from Victor, and it is the best scene in the episode, and one of the best scenes in the entire series.
It may be Bergman's best scene
ever. Yeah, I would agree with that. Especially, you know, maybe, now that I'm watching the series again and finding myself enormously disappointed with his behavior in most of everything that I'm watching. That one really does come off as his shining moment.
And it, of course, beggars another question.
Uh-oh. Oh, dear.
now that I think about it, if all of this is being played out for Koenig and Dr. Russell to understand the situation as it seems to be, because they're the only two that seem to remember it, And even if they weren't the only two that remembered it, they were the only two that were there to actually hear what the deal was, mm-hmm, about the fear and the nonsense. Which one of them experienced Bergman giving that speech?
Neither.
Exactly. So again, if you're going to make a story in which a person is being shown how things go wrong in their world, if you're going to do that, I'm not saying you should, but as a writer, if you're going to do that, everything should be from that person's point of view.
Exactly.
They should be in every scene.
Exactly. And that has been something which has always irritated me whenever this kind of cheat takes place. So many times we will be led to believe that something is happening in the real world when it's really all a delusion in one person's mind. But wait a minute. If it's a delusion in this person's head, how come we're seeing this that's totally isolated? Always hated that. And now Victor's greatest moment is one of those. So it cheapens. I mean, it's cheapened in the fact that we're going to get the reset. But even more so in that neither Helena nor John were present. I mean, that's a terrible way of putting it, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah. So that's...
That's really bad storytelling.
Well, gosh, I wasn't expecting bad storytelling from Space 1999. I mean, darn.
I know. What a disappointment, huh?
I'm being a touch I guess, sarcastic there.
Oh, really?
Okay, so the next episode of Space 1999, when we get to it, is going to be The Last Enemy. Which, I might point out, is the last episode that they showed of Season 1 in the United States order.
Really? Interesting.
So this is the one that they held for the very last, but it's 18th in production order. 24th in American airing order, 18th in production order.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's reason I mention that. There is reason that I mention that.
Okay.
So, but it probably won't come up until we get to the 24th episode in production order. Anyway, Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, pleasure. Really.
For these
seriously,
war games.
I mean it. It was such a joy. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
And listeners, I do hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Fears.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Please consider becoming our sponsor at patreon.com/fusionpatrol. We'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on iTunes. Stop by and visit us at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Search for us on Facebook under Fusion Patrol. Check out our Twitter handle, @FusionPatrol. Or just send us an email at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Please come join the conversation. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf. Hello and welcome to, wow, did my voice crack there? 5, 4, 3...